Welcome to The Choice.
This is Kurt Doolittle, Episode 7, China and Fascism 1. In this episode, I'll answer a Q&A from a reader. It provides a little context for something we don't generally consider. A reader asks, Kurt, what are the factors of economic growth in China that are possible because it's a communist country? 1. They have a devoted, nationalistic military with a profound chip on its shoulder called the Red Army, and they're convinced of their ethnic and cultural superiority, and they're committed to China's destiny to return to its traditional position as the center of the world, where it can force implementation of policy both internally and in the world at large, as they did through much of history. Unlike Europeans who colonize poorly and don't force integration, the Chinese Han have colonized something like 7 countries and forcibly integrated them right into Han civilization to the point where they all believe they're Han the way the South Americans all believe they're Spanish. 2. They have an authoritarian government running the empire as a business, with a network of what would historically be called noble families that's backed by an army that can enforce the government's authoritarian policy. 3. They have a very long tradition of very professional bureaucracy, and just like the best industries, they deliberately grow professional government leadership by the gradual promotion of those who are successful at local levels into increasing degrees of responsibility. Compare that to the quality of people running Democrat cities today. 4. They have a vast labor pool, the only cheap labor pool with a 100-plus IQ, meaning it's the most industrializable pool of poor remaining in the world. For some reason, I'm not even sure it's true, but it appears to be, the Chinese don't appear to be paying the rural IQ tax that other civilizations have. 5. They use intelligence gathering, meaning spies, their international students, and overseas citizens as spies and thieves, and they conduct outright thefts by every mean possible to obtain technology. They require domestication of technology by foreign countries and training of their people in exchange for access to their markets, thus nullifying the value of investing in their markets. They use their cheap labor and imported technology to slowly take over world industrial production, just as honestly the USA did to Europe in the mid to late 1800s, and just as Americans and Russians stole and took advantage of German post-war technology. 6. They use the invention of Reagan-era American financial credit systems, meaning digital money, to make all these investments, so that they didn't have to use the communist model of forced labor in order to afford it, and therefore they avoided the communist-socialist problem of incentives and the impossibility of economic calculation. Both forced labor in the Soviet model or credit labor in the Chinese and American models will work until they won't work any longer, at least. Both American and Chinese should stop working about the same time, but that's longer than the communist and socialist model. Normally, this just means you have a credit problem at the end rather than an institutional problem of corruption. However, let's correct a perception. China is fascist, not a communist country. Now, we can't face this painful truth yet, but the Chinese didn't copy the communists. They aren't a communist government. Instead, they copied the Nazis. They're a fascist government. Fascism consists of nationalism, racism, attempt at autarky, a mixed economy, opposition to European liberalism, degeneracy, mob rule, and opposition to Jewish cosmopolitanism, meaning one world government, subjugating all, depriving people of sovereignty and self-determination. And most of all, their opposition to American expansionary democracy, the failed project to spread democracy beyond northern European peoples, who are uniquely able to practice it because of historical genetics and cultural institutions. The reason is rather obvious why China would break into many small countries like Europe or like the USA is very likely to this century if democracy prevailed there. The history and mission of, quote, one China, unquote, depends on the authority to use force to maintain northern Han rule over southern not-so-Han technology and industry, and to eventually conquer and exterminate the Tibetans so that China's river water sources, upon which their entire food production depends, and all of which begin there, can't be strategically cut or occupied. And rule of the, just like rule of the South China Seas, is so important to her because of her dependence on shipping that can't be cut. We don't think of it this way, but in many ways, China's a very vulnerable island, and they're aware of it. And so what Chinese have done, as the Germans did, is prove that fascism, not democracy, not social democracy, not communism, won the war of political models of the 19th and 20th centuries. Why? Because A, intolerance for political competition turns out to be good. B, ethnocentrism, which we think of as racism, turns out to be good. We just can't say that in the West. It turns out to be the optimum social order. C, party practices desperate efforts to maintain legitimacy by keeping the people happy. In other words, that's good too. The, like a good monarchy or a good despot, the government feels vulnerable, and so it takes very good care of the people. E, creating an economy first rather than a military first. That was good. Russia didn't do that. F, they used the economy to build the world's dominant military afterwards. Well, good for them, not so good for the rest of us. G, so over time, they hope to replace the USA's dollar as the reserve currency in the world, which is, to them, good, because the USA can't afford its military if we lose that reserve currency status, which is, again, good for them, bad for us, and therefore China will become the dominant power in the world once we are not. I don't know if that's good. We have to decide. So what are the parallels between Germany and China? Again, China is practicing fascist, racist, national socialism, meaning state capitalism. China was genetically, culturally, institutionally, and technologically superior and had ethnically spread across near countries and evolved those near countries. China had a long educational history, a profoundly good bureaucracy, a much more than competent military, a very competent workforce. It had an industrial advantage over the eastern side of the continent. China had been wronged by the British Empire, and China had a failed new government, in other words, the Maoism, with terrible consequences that they'd like to overcome. Germany follows the same path. It was genetically, culturally, institutionally, and technologically superior, and it had spread across nearby countries and evolved them. Germany was the intellectual and academic core of Europe. It had the best and most advanced bureaucracy in the world. It had better, more advanced industry and a polity that was a quality advantage over the Western continent. It had a martial aristocracy to lead it, the best in the world. It had been wronged by Napoleon, destroying the core of Europe, which had been the Holy Roman Empire. If you want to know what's wealthy in Europe today, it's still the Holy Roman Empire. Germany had been wronged in World War I, she was attempting to restore herself again, and Germany would be wronged in World War II, attempting to restore herself and her people, although the means by which they did that didn't work out very well. So in both China and Germany, ethno-nationalism, state capitalism, state secular religion of nationalism, state intolerance for competition, state education and indoctrination, the efforts at full employment, amazing benefits, and generating the unparalleled devotion and unity not seen before, creates an entire army of society and which unfortunately needs an external enemy in order to maintain. So it was perfect for both countries, except, of course, Mr. Hitler overreached and practiced ideology over empiricism, which is really the reason he failed, and the whole world ganged up on him for it, just as Xi Jinping is overreached and is practicing ideology over empiricism today. I we can't quite figure out what they're doing, but we're assuming they're trying to beat the clock, so to speak, before they run out of time. On the other hand, we still have to understand that this is not something new. What we call fascism is just a traditional way of running civilizations, states with core states within them and the states around them. The best model for man turns out to be, and this is just science, whether we want to deal with it or not, we have to come to terms with it. Ethno-nationalism is simply provides a more harmonious a polity that's more tolerant of redistribution because it has less status and political competition and more tendency to take care of each other. State capitalism is better than private capitalism in the production of long-term strategic incentives. So one of the reasons we're in trouble here today is we've let private capital run wild, and it has focused on rent-seeking from consumers and short-term returns that aren't necessarily helpful. Why it is that Elon Musk has to work so hard to do such a thing as bring battery production into this country instead of the government throwing every cent possible at it that he can is, again, a function of an error of our understanding of the function of state capitalism, what states need to invest in, basic research and capital investment and long-term development, and private investment, which is better at taking advantage of market opportunities as things shift. Also discovering new ones. So they have a state secular religion of nationalism, which is the traditional religion of pre-monopoly religions, civilizations. They have incredible state intolerance for competition. There is no general good to political competition unless you are trying to remove someone. That's fine if you can evict them, which is what votes are good for. On the other hand, internal political competition is just a good way of deciding who's going to win the spoil of the current productivity. It doesn't help you make good investments in the future. Instead, it makes the entire state focus on how to consume every living asset you have. Again, these states are better at obtaining full employment. They produce amazing benefits, and they produce unparalleled devotion and unity, whereas what we have has produced unparalleled conflict and hostility to the point we're about to kick off a hot civil war. So China isn't communist, it's Nazi, and just as the Nazis would have without the entirety of the developed world going to war with them, China's probably going to win. This is Kurt Doolittle. Thanks for listening to The Choice.